Are you guys ready to record this whole thing all over again?
I didn't care for it. I didn't buy it.
That seems pretty ridiculous.
I don't even want to think about the possibility of you having your dick out.
Yikes.
Is this the most important thing in the universe? What happened to it? I don't know.
I needed to suck in absolutely every moment of awesomeness.
Yeah.
Hey, welcome back to another great episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. David here with my personal guardians of the universe, more than the galaxy, the universe, Randy and Justin. How the hell are you doing, Randy?
I'm fantastic, but now I'm a little overwhelmed that I have to guard an entire universe.
Whole universe. Now, Justin, I know you were a little emotional earlier, but how are you doing?
I am fabulous, David. Thank you. How are you?
I am amazing. And, yeah. I mean, I guess we'll get it out of the way here. We're going to talk a lot about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. So this is your official spoiler warning. I don't want to hear any complaining or any bitching that we spoiled any part of this movie. Made $145 million. So more than likely, if you wanted to see it, you saw it. But just in case, go see it. Come back. Listen to us. Tear this movie apart. What we loved, what we didn't love, what worked, what didn't work. But no bitching about spoilers. So, Justin, what was your initial impression of Guardians of the Galaxy 2?
Loved it. Loved every second of it. When it was over, I was just a teary mess. I was on my period or something, and I could not stop crying.
All right. Randy, your initial impression, were you overjoyed?
I don't know if I'd say overjoyed, but I feel like I enjoyed it more than the first one.
All right, well, that's high praise. If Justin or I had said that, that'd be really high praise, but you didn't really care for the first one, right?
Yeah, I was mediocre about the first one.
If you had to give a letter grade to the first one, and I hate that I'm asking this because I know I'm going to get upset when you answer it, what letter grade would you give the original? If you say anything in, like, the C range, I'll just reach to this internet connection and just choke the life out of you.
I'd say C plus B minus. solid 79%.
You ever ask a question, and the second it gets out of your mouth, you're like, this is the question that's going to make me mad.
Yep.
It's like I'm talking to my kids. Like, I know what they're going to tell me is a lie or something that's going to make me mad, but I got to ask it anyway. So, well, that's great. I liked it. I didn't love it. I'll have my nitpicks in a little bit. But Justin, you seem to be the most up on it. Why don't you tell us what worked for you about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2?
Okay. So I like that it was it focused on family and what that means. That really just kind of struck a nerve with me, and I loved every bit of that. And you know, they do fight a lot, and which family doesn't? So it was very relatable in a lot of ways for me. And I honestly think that while Baby Groot has been everyone's highlight, yes, he was adorable, but I think that Yondu stole the show. Michael Rooker just fucking crushed it, and I was just so proud of his like performance, and I'm so glad that he's been acting for all these years, and people are finally just on the Michael Rooker train. Like, he's just a badass, and this movie really, really showcased his talents for the whole world to enjoy.
Yeah, I think that it was interesting because I was apprehensive once it became obvious that he was going to have like the good guy turn. That, you know, it's hard for them to go from villain to hero, but I think he totally nailed it. Like, I didn't doubt it for a second. You know, everything they were saying made sense. It didn't seem like an out of left field type of turn, and I think he was amazing as well.
Right, especially since he's been, like you said, his crew points out that he's been soft on Star-Lord for as long as they can remember, always letting him get away with shit. So, I mean, that even, he has a track record of feeling that way towards him, so it wasn't a surprise whatsoever.
Yeah. What about you, Randy? What's some of the stuff that worked for you really well?
Drax. Dude. Yeah. Drax, for me, in this movie, is what Groot was, I think, in the first movie for everybody. I loved his character development. I love how they kind of almost gave him, like, a love interest in a weird sort of way. I thought all of his interactions were gold.
Yeah. When Mando's asked, "Can I pet your puppy? He's very cute." He's like, "Yeah." Every time he laughed, he had like just that infectious laugh that like you had to laugh. And yeah, he was pretty good as well. Well, okay, let's go a little different. Was there anything that didn't work for you, Justin? I know you loved it. It was A+, number one Japanese superstar for you. But was there anything that was kind of a miss for you, like disappointed you?
No, not exactly. I know that you had a problem initially, like one of your first reactions was that you didn't like that the crew was split up. And I thought that was going to be a concern for me as well, but I think that because each character really got a moment to shine and was really able to develop, and I liked all the characters, I didn't care for the split up so much. Versus like a show like The Walking Dead or Lost, whenever there was a character that I didn't really care about, and I'd be like, oh my god, I can't believe I got to watch another one of these episodes. I didn't feel that way at all with this movie. Regardless of whoever was on screen, I was just totally locked on. So for me, there was nothing that didn't work.
Oh, nice. Well, that's the hallmark of a good film. What about you, Randy? Any missteps?
I mean, I don't know. No, I'm thinking it. I can't really think of any. I mean, clearly, and the reason why I said I bet your kids loved it is because it seems like the humor is definitely based for a younger audience than your other Marvel movies, and I get that. And I happen to be – usually I try to go to theaters that are 18 and older for screenings like this, for movies like this. But this time I didn't have a chance to get tickets for that one, so I was in with a younger crowd. And kids were loving it for sure. Yeah, but I can't think of any big missteps.
Oh. Well, that's good.
I mean, one of my biggest, I will throw back to, if we go back to, you know, 2 years from now, when I first was talking about what I didn't like about the original Guardians, and I was talking about what it was like if your body was out in space, and we see a lot of bodies out in space in this movie again. I still don't like how they treat that. But like somebody just floating out of an airlock rather than getting sucked out of an airlock, for example. Or slowly dying instead of just like instantly freezing or anyway.
Well, NASA's come out and said that you could live up to 30 seconds in space.
I'll believe that, but it would be a very uncomfortable. It wouldn't look like you're slowly, peacefully dying. It would be a violent affair.
Right. If there was like a decompression or something like that.
Yeah. Your blood would be boiling. It would be terrible.
Yeah.
Maybe
every orifice that you had would have juice getting sucked out of it, whether it be like your eyes or your nose or whatever, but it'd be bad.
Tell me more.
No, I can't. I'll throw up in my mouth a little bit.
Yeah, Justin mentioned one of my missteps that, like, I don't like it when they break up the team, and, you know, but I understand for a story point, you know, not everyone can be involved in a central storyline. Some people have to go on a little side quest, but it seemed like they introduced extra characters to fill in for, like, the A-team. While you know, the other people were out and about, but it wasn't a huge issue. It was just a small gripe. My biggest gripe has to be that we didn't have a clue what was going on, what the point of this movie was until like an hour and 40 minutes into it, when Kurt Russell finally reveals that he's the villain of this film. We didn't have this clear journey, and, you know, I love these characters, so I'm happy to go follow them around for a while, but I think we needed to have a little bit of, you know, breadcrumbs laid for us, so we knew that, like, this is the story we're following. That's probably my biggest gripe. I did really like how they played with some of, like, you know, your standard film tropes. You know, normally when you have, like, a person whose, like, parent has been gone his whole life and shows up, he's the one who's, like, or he or she, or the one who's like, oh, it's my dad, he's back, and it's all, like, they forget that, like, this guy wasn't around for their whole life, to where this one, it was kind of nice to where, you know, Star-Lord was smart enough to be like, this doesn't feel right. And it was his buddies who were like, just what's the worst that could happen? We'll just kill him if it doesn't work out.
Right. So. So on that note, actually, I kind of liked how we didn't really know about the villain. I mean, we know we had the gold lady. What's her name? Ayesha or something like that?
Sure.
Ayesha? Whatever. We'll call her Ayesha. She was obviously chasing them throughout the cosmos, which is fine and dandy, but one of the missteps that Marvel tends to have is that they have these throwaway villains, and they don't really get much in the way of development, whereas this time we got to see Kurt Russell in various forms, both in the, as his true form and as sort of a lying con man, as it were. Ego is a bit of a mischievous asshole in the comic books, so it was kind of cool to see that. And I like that. I like that he was actually developed. He had a lot of screen time, and we didn't know quite what to make of him for so long. And to me, that resonated pretty well, because all the other Marvel movies, the villain is in the movie for like 10 minutes total, and that's not good enough for me.
Yeah, I agree. I just wish they would have thrown maybe some like false flags or MacGuffins our way to where we, you know, we think we're going this way, and then, you know, maybe at the end when we get the Ego revealed, then it's like a swerve. I just think that we were kind of floating rudderless for a little bit of while, and while things were happening and things were progressing, I would have liked to have had like a clear line narrative, like maybe, you know, Rocket, they have to get back because they don't think that Kurt Russell's bad, but like something is wrong with the planet or something like that they have to get back for. And I didn't really care for once Ego became the villain and there was a lot where he wasn't Kurt Russell and like he was like this tentacle monster and like there was like just like his face, like he was Andross from like Star Fox or something like that.
Right.
So that seemed like vintage Marvel, you know, like kind of like dropping the ball in the third act. I won't lie, I cheered when Chris Pratt turned, or when Star-Lord turned into Pac-Man. I was right. Like, oh, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. We got Pac-Man in there. But yeah, I mean, those are mostly small nitpicks. My favorite moment of the whole film probably is when Kurt Russell admits to Chris Pratt that, I guess I can use it, Ego admits to Star-Lord that he put the brain tumor in his mom, and Pratt goes full Han Solo.
Han Solo? I know. Dude, I totally thought of Han Solo and Darth Vader too at that moment. I was like, oh, this is badass. That was pretty rad.
No thinking for later repercussions. He just pulled out both pistols and just like blasted him.
Yeah, I would say that moment and then the entire escape scene from the ship with Yondu and Rocket and Groot, baby Groot. That was incredible, where the arrows just flying all over the place, just murdering everybody, and the music's playing. It was just cinematic magic. It was amazing.
And it pulls out all far, and you see like above, you see all the hallways, and you see these red streaks going all over the place.
And then when Rocket gets into it, and he just starts shooting everyone too. I just thought that was so cool.
Yeah, they were a fun little trio, Groot, Rocket, and Yondu. And I liked when Groot was going on his mission to find all this stuff, and he brought back like the desk.
That was pretty great.
I really liked, you know, Yondu's send off with Star-Lord. That was nice. Even the whole scene, you know, even with Rocket having his tase, you know, Gamora, so she didn't go after Star-Lord because he knew that, you know, they probably weren't coming back. And yeah, it was a pretty emotional movie. I liked it a lot.
Oh, God, I could not stop crying. I was crying when they were playing catch, for crying out loud. I was like, oh, my God, I want to play catch with Kurt Russell.
Energy ball catch.
Yeah, oh, it was fantastic.
So what's the ruling here, Randy? Is Kurt Russell at the beginning, is that Kurt Russell with just a fun wig?
I don't know, man. I'm glad we're bringing this up because I wanted to talk about it. It looked so good. I dare say probably better than any digital de-aging I've ever seen. But at the same time, it almost didn't look like him, because we've all seen movies with a young Kurt Russell. Something just looked kind of off. It looks so good. Maybe.
Yeah, I seen it twice. And the first time I saw it, I just assumed it was CGI. And like it never even dawned on me that this just could be Kurt Russell in a wig. And I was mostly staring at his hair. But then when you had said last week on the podcast that like you thought it was practical, I was kind of trying to watch it with a keen eye, and I'm like, I don't know. So, I mean, obviously it's pretty good. Whatever it is, it's good. Cause
whatever it is works. It's freaking fantastic.
Yeah. There was no uncanny valley there. I mean, if it was real, that good on Kurt Russell for being so youthful and at his age. And if it's CGI,
there are reports that it was not CGI, that it was done practically.
There you go. Well, good on them. I have to imagine there might have been some manipulation later on, but
yeah. Because they had the CG model for the young Kurt Russell that they used for like all those kind of like for lack of a better description, statues that kind of reenacted the scenes from his past kind of thing. So they have that digital model of a young Kurt Russell that looks a lot like the actual one that was in the movie earlier.
Yeah.
But yeah, maybe you know what? Maybe they just had somebody take and sculpt a really good image of his face and made a prosthetic to put on like a creature actor, a monster actor. He's used to doing big prosthetic work like that. You know, somebody with what's the guy's name that
Ben
does
Winston?
But I'm talking about the actor. I can't think of his name. He's real tall and thin, and he does a lot of creature roles.
I don't know.
Anyway.
That guy.
Anyway. But yeah, it could have just been a prosthetic as well. That's how they could do it. Because he didn't talk much.
No.
He started smiling a lot.
Whatever it was, it worked.
Yeah.
I have no complaints. Whatever they did was definitely a hit. So what was... You know, we got five after-credit scenes. You know, we got a couple fun Easter eggs inside the movie, you know, whether it be Stanley as a watcher, you know, or anything like that. What was your favorite little post-credit scene there, Andy? We got so many. We got the Drax getting shot with the arrow.
That one's fun. I kind of like the Teenage Groot one.
With all the vines everywhere.
The awkward teen years. Voice changing, all emo. Yeah.
I'm not boring. So did you guys catch, too, that at the beginning of the movie, it said Missouri 1980, and that's when we had Kurt Russell and Star-Lord's mom. And then it said 34 years later, which would make it 2014. So does Guardians of the Galaxy 2 take place in 2014?
I imagine it takes place right after the first one, because Groot hasn't grown very much.
Well, I mean, we never set a definitive timeline for when the first one is, but this one, it said 34 years later, and it opened in 1980.
Maybe.
It just seems weird that they would set the film 3 years in the past.
Or maybe it was supposed to be 34 years after... No, it can't be 34 years after his mama died, because then he'd be older than...
Yeah, because
that's not the case.
Yeah, they don't want to make Chris Pratt's character appear too old, I guess.
Maybe.
Like that.
It's got to be younger than 35. That's the cutoff date. Otherwise, kids, he's going to be out of that 18 to 35 demographic. Kids aren't going to be able to relate to him.
Maybe. I'm
joking, but that might be pretty serious. I don't know.
I would say that's safe only because all of this is happening sort of around the same timeline from the time the Avengers first fought the aliens in New York to Thor fighting aliens in London or whenever the fuck that was, and then obviously the incident with Ultron and then Civil War. So, I mean, I think they're trying to keep it all within a relatively close time frame.
All right. That's fine. Well, we learned about 6 months ago that James Gunn shot Stan Lee's next three cameos back to back to back. And so I'm assuming that they're all similar. And this one, we got him pretty much confirmed as being a watcher. It was a popular fan theory that, you know, since he shows up in all these different places, that he's actually one of the cosmic beings that are set forth to watch the Marvel Universe. And we saw him actually interacting with some actual watchers. Is this just fun fan service, Justin, or you seem to be kind of mixed on it earlier?
Yeah, it's probably just fan service. I mean, I can't imagine there being any other reason to do it.
It's getting up there in years. They found that they want to make sure they cement this theory before it's too late.
Right.
As morbid as that sounds. Well, what grade do you give it, Randy?
I give it a solid B.
Hey, all right. Justin, what do you give it?
Ooh, I give it an A.
A, dang, you love that movie.
Love it. Right. Adore it, David.
Adore it. Not love, adore. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. Is adore, I think love's better than adore, isn't it?
I don't know. It holds a very special place in my heart.
There you go. Love is fleeting.
That? Maybe it's, I don't know. And I thought about maybe it's the hype, but I went and saw it by myself. I went to one of the IPIC theater where you're in a recliner, you know, and... I soaked it all in, and I just literally loved every second of it. And there was only like five people in the theater when I saw it. I went to like a 1 o'clock show on Friday.
Nice.
And, so normally there's the energy from the crowd and everything, but it was just me and the movie screen, and I was in love.
Nice. All right, well, that's cool. I would say I gave it a B minus. That's my score. So send your hate mail to David@geeklegacy.com.
This is the same guy that ranks the Hulk at number one in your all time favorite movies.
Nope. That's not even close to clear. I did see it opening day at the movie theater, and that's why my wife doesn't trust me to pick movies anymore.
And it's so long.
It's bad. Oh, man, the CGI does not hold up very well either.
You mean that poodle? What about the poodle? How's the poodle look?
And none of nothing in that movie looks good. And just when you think it's over, Nick Nolte becomes the best. Oh, man.
Oh, yeah.
Anyways, going from space to Game of Thrones. Did you guys see that HBO is in the process of trying to develop a spin-off show for Game of Thrones, and they have it narrowed down to four choices. Of course, they didn't tell us the four choices, but does that excite you, Randy? You want to see more Game of Thrones?
I would adore the idea of seeing more Game of Thrones. Yeah, I mean, anything that gets me more of that world, sure. Bring it on.
All right. Well, Justin, as a book reader, I'm assuming that you're cool with the idea of more Game of Thrones. Do you have any particular ideas of what you'd want? Would you want a prequel show? Would you want something that takes place during the same time period that is focused on different characters? Or would you want to explore a different part of the world, since Westeros is really only like 1/10 of the actual world?
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing something from like 1,000 years ago, like Bran the Builder type of things, where we actually get to see the wall being built. I think that would be sort of a fun time frame to play with. But I don't care. I feel like I've heard the story of Robert Baratheon defeating the Targaryens enough to where I don't need to see it, at least anytime soon. So I would prefer to either go way back or jump way into the future.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. I depending on how it ends, yeah, going to the future could be fun. I wouldn't mind going back, you know, the 400 years or whatever to, like, the Doom of Valyria. I went down a real weird rabbit hole of YouTube videos, you know, how like it plays in like the next one, it says starting in like 5 seconds. And it was just all, it's like this guy's YouTube channel called like The Last Harpy or something like that, and he had some really crazy and highly believable just speculation for who this character is, talking about, you know, the importance of Bran and how we've seen how he can affect Hodor, that, you know, maybe he's, maybe some of these events that we're so intimate with have been affected by him, you know, like the Mad King Ares, you know, all he was doing was like mumbling to himself, like, burn them all, you know, that could be Bran going back, but meaning to talk about burn the White Walkers and burn the dead so they don't turn to White Walkers, and, you know, somehow affecting that. And it was just a really cool rabbit hole I went down, and I recommend everyone, you know, go down a rabbit hole like that. But I also, through that rabbit hole, found out, I guess in October, someone had leaked a large portion of the plots of season 7, and if those are accurate, it's going to be one hell of a season. I will not spoil it for anybody. It was one of those things, like, had I known ahead of time, I probably wouldn't want to be spoiled, but he started talking about it, and he did everything right. He gave the spoiler warning and said this, but at that point, I was already in, and I'm like, why not? And sort of wish I didn't, but yeah.
They revealed the writers for the potential projects too, and that's Max Borenstein, who did Godzilla and Kong Skull Island, Jane Goldman, who did Kingsman, and then George R. R. Martin could be paired with her, and then Brian Helgeland, who did L.A. Confidential and Robin Hood.
Yeah,
it's kind of cool.
Because, you know, what does George R. R. Martin have to do except, you know, write book 6
right. and 7?
Well, yeah, that brings an interesting point. No, he's developing Skinwalkers for Cinemax, one of his other novel series. You know, he's trying to develop these Game of Thrones spinoffs, and he's also trying to develop another show for Showtime. So where's he writing these books? We're not going to get these books.
Oh, we don't need them.
The TV show is the book.
We don't need them. Yeah, we got the show.
Yeah.
Who gives a shit, right?
Yeah. One of the videos I watched was a great video on, it was like the series of like how so-and-so wins the Game of Thrones. And there was one on Peter Baelish and I was like, yeah, he should win. But then they're all like, no, Sansa or Arya or someone's going to kill him.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if Sansa killed him.
Yeah.
I think it would be more poetic if Varys did it, but I don't think that's his style.
Yeah. I like Varys a lot. But yeah. I like Baelish too.
It's funny how you mentioned the rabbit hole on YouTube, because the same thing happened to me. I was watching, it was like deleted scenes from Game of Thrones, and then that took me to that Why Everyone Hates Cyclops video that I shared with you guys.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I'll watch this. I hate that fucking guy.
No way, Cyclops is the best.
Yeah, he's a piece of shit. Hands down, bar none, the worst.
The worst ever?
Mm-hmm.
Worse than Emma Frost?
Oh, probably.
Probably. Who knows? Who knows? You know what we do know is that our good buddy,
Chappie.
What's his? Yeah, Chappie's, he ain't gonna be making no,
Alien
movies. Ridley Scott saw to that, put a bullet in Chappie's head. It's just kind of sad, you know. Everyone seemed to be really excited about Neil Blomkamp's Alien follow-up. This was, of course, pre-Chappie, yeah, the worst movie ever. And Sigourney Weaver was on, Michael Biehn was on. Michael Biehn was on. He was going to have a part, so of course he was excited. But everyone was super jacked. The only person that was pissing at people, even James Cameron had like made like some muted statement of being optimistic. The only person who's being a dick about it was Ridley Scott, and he seemed super offended that they were going to continue the Aliens franchise, go in a different direction without him. And then all of a sudden he wants to make Prometheus, and he makes The Martian, so he's got all this clout, and then Chappie comes out, so you know Blumkamp's clout goes way down, and he just kind of steps in and just takes all the hype from Blumkamp's Alien 5 and like morphs it into Alien Covenant, which looks fine, but it doesn't look like anything groundbreaking. You know, everything I see about Alien Covenant makes me think that it's just a remake of the first Alien with better graphics. But I don't know. What do you think, Justin? You love the Aliens.
I do. I love it a lot. And now I'm seeing articles that say that Ridley Scott wants to do like 3 more Alien movies.
Yeah.
So that's crazy, man. It's weird. As much as I love the franchise, I'm excited to see more Alien movies, but at the same time, I don't want it to hurt the franchise. It already suffered a pretty big wound with 3 and Resurrection for a lot of people. So anything that they could do to rebuild on that would be fantastic. If Alien Covenant does that, I mean, I think all of us thought Prometheus would be that next Alien movie that everyone wanted to see, and it let down a lot of folks. And it was a misstep and a missed opportunity in a lot of ways. And this seems like a good opportunity to fix that. So maybe if they expand on the world building and this is a planet that we get to revisit multiple times, perhaps it could be the movie that we're waiting for. But it just sucks that I feel like Neil Blomkamp, a lot of his inspiration comes from Alien movies. So I think he could have done pretty well with that franchise.
Right, and Blomkamp seems to be, you know, a genuine filmmaker. You know, say what you will about Chappie and Elysium. You know, he's a filmmaker with a clear vision, who has a unique vision of storytelling, who likes to impart social commentary into his films. Ridley Scott, for all of the amazing films he's made, is really a journeyman filmmaker. You know, he doesn't have a specific style, a specific point of view. You know, he doesn't have any real, you know, attachment to any project in particular. And so, I mean, Randy, do you think for the franchise as a whole, do you think, are we better going back to the well with Ridley Scott, who, you know, just kind of directs as he sees fit, doesn't storyboard and weird stuff like that? Or should we have given a chance to this Blumkamp kid who wants to make this weird Alien movie where Sigourney Weaver and Michael Biehn aren't dead?
I'm definitely going to side with the side of Blomkamp, because that's the alien movie that I wanted to see, you know. Retcon 3 and 4 and just continue off after Aliens. I will say, and we've talked about this before, I prefer Aliens over the original Alien. I like the James Cameron movie. I like the dynamic of it, more of a kind of like a big battle kind of action movie rather than just like a monster in the house horror movie, which is what I would consider kind of the first one to be. And I have a feeling that in Ridley Scott's movies going forward, they're going to be a lot more themes like the original Alien and less like Aliens. So that's why I would be in favor of Blomkamp Alien 5. But it's a moot point because it looks like it was double tapped in the back of the skull. So it's lying there dead on the side of the road.
How about this? We let Ridley Scott do Alien Covenant, and then we have James Cameron come in and do Alien Covenants.
There you go.
That man.
All you got to do is pluralize it.
Yeah.
That's all. Let's make it plural.
He's too busy making Avatar 2 through 30 or whatever.
Sure. I don't think those are ever coming out. I think we're already supposed to be like three sequels into that movie, that franchise.
It's got to wait 10 years, man.
He does take his time. God bless him. He can. His last two films did pretty well, so. Mm.
He knows the thing or two.
Yeah. He's kind of like Tarantino. He takes his time, picks his projects, blows it out of the water. Well, I have a fun list. Do you guys have any other newsy stories you want to chat about before we get into the arguing?
Oh, I think arguing sounds fun.
Iron Man. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 is the 15th Marvel movie in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. That started way back when Iron Man first debuted on the screen. Of course, it wasn't meant to be a shared universe, but you know, it happened to be, and everything seemed to work out pretty good. So I decided I was going to rank them 15 to 1, 15 being the worst, 1 being the best, and figured you guys would probably yell at me and call me stupid, and we'd fight about it for a little bit, and that would be fun. How's that sound?
Sounds fantastic.
All right. I don't think anyone will give me too much grief for the first couple, but so number 15 is my least favorite Marvel Cinematic Universe. I don't say worst because they're all pretty good. I mean, even the worst one, which is Iron Man 2 in my eyes, still has some merit. You know, some of it is fun. Iron Man 2 is my number 15th best Marvel Cinematic Universe movie. Any argument?
That's fair.
It's an easy one to get out of the way. Mm-hmm. Same thing can be said about number 14, which is Thor: The Dark Worlds. There were some funny parts in there with, you know, I want to say Cat Stevens, but Cat Denning. Overall, I just didn't dig Eccleston. I thought that the Loki Thor stuff was great, and I really want them to just be brothers and be happy and start like a B&B in Asgard. But judging from the Thor Ragnarok trailer, that's not going to happen. Number 13 is a film that kind of came out recently that some people were really jiving on, but Doctor Strange. I did not really care for. It was basically a remake of the original Iron Man without the charisma. Did you guys both see Doctor Strange?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Did you guys enjoy Doctor Strange?
I enjoyed it, and I'll agree with your assessment. It's definitely following that Iron Man 1 formula, but I would also agree that it kind of lacked the charisma.
All right. Moving right along to the sequel to Justin's favorite movie of all time, number 12, Edward Norton's The Incredible Hulk. We all knew where we were that time when Hulk blood got put into the soda pop and Stan Lee drank it and went nuts.
I don't remember that.
That's how they found the Hulk, because he was hiding in like Brazil or something like that. He was working like a bottling factory for like soda, and a drop of his blood got into the soda and he couldn't find the bottle, and it got shipped out, and then Stan Lee was the poor sap who drank it.
I don't remember that.
And that's how General Ross and his team knew to go to Brazil or whatever South American country it was. Hmm. Yeah. And so it begins my argument with Justin that my number 11 is Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Oh, yeah, that's a shame.
Justin, I'm sure, will give us his top five in a little bit. And if Randy is quick about it, he probably can get his top five, too. And we'll see if Guardians of the Galaxy 2 ends up on either of their list.
I think given the movies, these 15 movies that are on this list, I feel like your critiques of Guardians of the Galaxy 2 aren't enough to put it this far down the list compared to some of the other ones that will be on this list. I can't imagine you being able to come up with a more compelling argument that, let's say, Iron Man 3 or even Age of Ultron ranks higher, or even the first Avenger ranks higher on your list than Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Yeah, well, you'll have to wait and see. Avengers has a special place for bringing what would think to be an unbringable team together.
No, but that's fine. Like, the first Avengers is fantastic, but I mean, even Age of Ultron, though, I do not see how you think that is better than Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Like, maybe I underplayed my displeasure with the lack of story in the first 100 minutes of Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Like, I just felt that really, really takes it down a couple notches as far as film, as a film goes. Mm-hmm. And like I said, like, I was great going on the ride. It was fun seeing Rocket and Groot and all them, but they weren't really going anywhere for a while. It was just set piece, jumping into set piece, jumping into set piece, jumping into set piece, jumping into set piece. Oh, Ego's the bad guy, credits. Mm-hmm. As opposed to taking us A to B to C to D. And I don't need a direct linear narrative, but I need something.
Sounds like you do.
No.
It sounds like you need your hand held the entire movie.
Exactly. Number 10, Captain America Civil War. This is a film that has not done well on a repeat viewing for me. I, out of the gate, really, really enjoyed it. But on my subsequent two repeat watches, it just tumbles down. And eventually, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 will probably be above it.
All right. Randy, you don't have anything to interject here?
I got nothing.
You're still good? Okay.
Randy doesn't like any Marvel movie. As long as Iron Man's on the top, he doesn't care.
You know, I got a bomb I'm going to drop in you guys right now. I figured now's as good a time as any. The only Marvel movie I've seen more than once is the first Iron Man. Because I own it, and I've seen it probably 5 or 6 times. Every single other Marvel movie I saw when it came out in the theater, and I haven't seen it since.
Well, there you go.
So they're all fresh in your mind is what you're saying.
I think I sat down to try to watch Guardians of the Galaxy again, but I didn't make it all the way through. But I did develop a little bit more of an appreciation for it the second time, even though I didn't finish it. But yeah, that's interesting.
Like, and it's something I did to get through it, but it was better.
Yeah, it was better. Yeah, just I mean, so I mean, that's where I come from, though. I mean, I generally don't watch a movie more than once, maybe twice, unless it's something that I really love. And even then, like the Star Wars movies or the Indiana Jones movies, I'll watch them like once every 5 years, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Just because otherwise it makes it less special if I watch it all the time.
That's very true. Number 9, the original Thor. And this movie was hard because arguably it has the only good villain in a Marvel Cinematic Universe, Ego included. And it was hard because I hate the trope of a superhero losing their superpowers, but in Thor, it's almost charming. Like Thor, like going to Earth and like ordering coffee and like throwing cups on the ground and calling people wenches and stuff like that. But number 9, Thor with Mr. Chris Hemsworth. Now we come to number 8 that Justin mentioned a little bit ago. Avengers, Age of Ultron. Number 8. It's the opposite of Civil War. It actually, on repeat viewing, does quite well. I was not a huge fan of Age of Ultron when it first came out. But I think a lot of that had to do with the way that Marvel markets their films. And it's a big problem that Marvel creates hype for what's next, not for what's now. And so when you go into a Marvel movie, you're already excited for the next property more than what you're going to see. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 was probably one of the few cases in recent memory where I wasn't more excited for what film was coming next versus what I was watching. And I think Age of Ultron was kind of the height of that, because after Age of Ultron, we had Ant-Man, but then we knew already that there was going to be Civil War less than a year later. And so that's what we were all looking forward to. We knew in April we were going to get Civil War, and that's what we were excited for. And so I think – oh, sorry.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I think that Guardians is going to get you – it should have got you excited for Infinity War because, A, the Guardians have now defeated a celestial being. They've essentially defeated a god, so their resume will now be useful to the Avengers when they fight a titan like Thanos. And not only that, but you also have Nebula, who's just downright... Her mission is to defeat Thanos, and it's bringing the cosmic universe towards Earth, which I think is
exciting. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm super jacked for Infinity War because I love Thanos to death. I just meant that they've been pretty low-key on Age of Ultron details. You know, we got that little video, but they haven't been hitting us over the head with it to where when Age of Ultron came out, they were kind of just every 5 seconds was, oh, so-and-so's going to be in Civil War. Civil War this, Civil War that. Spider-Man's going to be in Civil War. And so going into... like Avengers Ultron, I was already over it. Mm-hmm. Like they have these such exhaustive marketing campaigns that by the time the film's out, you're almost tired of hearing about it. And that's that. DC's really had that problem as well. But they've been doing a really good job with Wonder Woman to where you see enough to where you can tell they're putting their best foot forward, but it's not Batman v Superman level to where they're just beating it over your head so consistently that by the time the movie comes out, you're just tired of hearing about it. Mm-hmm. If that makes any sense at all. Number 7.
It makes more sense than this list, I'll tell you that much.
hate's going to swell here. Number 7, Captain America, the First Avenger. Ugh. I had recently rewatched it, and you guys know I hate period pieces, but I think that out of all of the superheroes, Captain America is probably the best suited for this cinematic universe, and I think a lot of it has to do with the way Chris Evans plays it. I think Chris Evans is probably the most talented actor that's been portraying one of these superheroes as of late, and his gravitas, and it could be some splash off from my incredible love for Winter Soldier, that's the First Avenger really resonates with me on a different level. I think that Red Skull is arguably, after Loki, the second best villain that Marvel has introduced in their films. And, you know, his connection to you know, the Cosmic Cube, to his diabolical plans, they're going to need to replace Thanos at some point. You know, Thanos is going to go down either Avengers 3 or Avengers 4. And we know that it's going to be a very different looking Marvel franchise. And I think that, you know, Red Skull could be someone that could be a large overarching villain for multiple franchises if they play him right. And Hugo Weaving's fun. All right. Number 6, Justin's favorite, Iron Man 3. I guess there's a distinction here. As an Iron Man film, this probably is not great. It asks the question, what's more important, the man in the suit or the suit itself? And then they prove to us that the suit itself is more important by having the entire third act be suits versus Guy Pearce.
Yeah, it's like 50 suits.
Right, and they show how completely unimportant Robert or Tony Stark is by having a remote control Iron Man save the day on multiple occasions. So From that respect, it's not a huge success. But as a film, as an enjoyable film, I love it to death. I know people hate the fact that the Mandarin is not this evil, diabolical person in charge of the Ten Rings. I love that it's just Ben Kingsley just acting his ass off and having fun. So for those reasons, number 6, Iron Man 3. Number 5, Ant-Man. I love me some Ant-Man. I've said it time and time again on the podcast. It makes me laugh. I love Baskin Robbins don't play. And it's got Michael Douglas. How can you go wrong? Number 4, Captain America, the Winter Soldier. I think that that's probably in the top 5 of really anybody's list who's making a top 15 Marvel list. Number 3, Guardians of the Galaxy. Another great, fantastic film. Number two is The Avengers. The only reason I put The Avengers over Guardians of the Galaxy is because I lived through The Avengers the entire process. If my son were to make a list, Avengers probably would be three, with Guardians being two. But I remember thinking, like, there's no way they can put all these superheroes in one movie. It's not going to make sense. You know, they can't give everyone their fair shake. But that battle in New York at the end is just, it's just great. And number one, of course, is the originator, the one that started it all, Iron Man, directed by Jon Favreau, kicked off this franchise with Robert Downey Jr. And my love for Favreau is so strong that I put him at the top and the bottom of this list, because he is both the best and the worst. But no joke, I love Jon Favreau so much, I would watch a movie he stars in, directs, writes, does craft services for, stunts. He could be the guy who drives him to the set, and I'd love it. So that's my list. I'm sure Justin will have his counterpunch. What, hit me with it.
Yeah, tell me how dumb I am. So I only made a top five, because these are the ones that I find the most enjoyable. Number five would be The Avengers. Fantastic movie. Number four would be The Winter Soldier. Love it to death, for more than it just being a superhero movie, but more like being just one of those old classic spy movies, and it's a lot of fun. And coming in next would be Guardians 2, and then number two would be the first Guardians of the Galaxy. Either one of these two could probably be flipped. I enjoy them both so freaking much. They're just very fun movies, and I don't know how else to describe them. They're just a blast. And then number one, like you, I also have the first Iron Man. It kicked off this entire cinematic universe, and it's just fun. And I remember when it came out the same summer as The Dark Knight, I kept going more to Iron Man because it was just more fun. While The Dark Knight was an incredible movie, it was just such an emotional commitment that I didn't really enjoy watching it. I mean, it's a great movie, but I didn't have fun watching it. Whereas Iron Man, I was like, fuck yeah, dude, this is amazing. Let's get some bad guys. And that just set the tone for this sort of fun and festive cinematic universe that we keep going to multiple times a year now, which is kind of exciting in itself. I am interested to see where, if Thor Ragnarok will shake things up a bit and that'll move further up your list, or Spider-Man. I'm curious to see where that's going to fall on our list, ultimately.
Yeah, I have a feeling Spider-Man's going to end up being pretty high on my list. I'm really looking forward to Homecoming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm hoping that, so far from what we've seen in the trailer, it looks like I'm really liking the Peter Parker high school stuff, like, that they've sold us as this John Hughes-esque movie. I don't know how the action set pieces are going to be. I'm sure they'll be fine. But, yeah, I love Tom Holland in Civil War, so I'm excited to see what he can pull off. Real quick, Justin, with Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, did you enjoy the music in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2? Because that was a big part of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1 that I really loved, that I didn't care for in the second one.
I do. You know what's funny is I actually have almost every single one of these songs on my iTunes playlist. So, like, for me, it was just like listening to my iPhone in the car. It was kind of funny. When you said that you weren't really into the music all that much, I was cracking up. I was like, oh, man, I love all this stuff.
Well, so. It wasn't as varied. Like, there was, like, you know, there were the two songs that they really, really hammered in, and who's, both of which escape me at this moment.
Oh, yeah. So there was, like, The Chain from Fleetwood Mac.
Is that the one that's, like, the cat? It sounds like cat, almost like Caddyshack?
No.
Okay.
The Chain is the one that's playing when Star-Lord and Ego are fighting.
Oh, okay.
And it also plays when they separate on their crash planet.
Yeah, they play it, like, four times. That's the one I was thinking of, the one that's got a, to me, it reminds me of Caddyshack. And then the one that he sung about his mom, like, was it?
Oh, yeah, Sam Cooke, that one?
Yeah.
You're talking about the one about the sea is calling to me or whatever?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You're a fine girl. Yeah, that's...
Yeah, they I don't know. and they just didn't seem as varied, you know, and they didn't seem, for me, they didn't work as well in the scenes to where, you know, like Cherry Bomb that they played like in like the first one and some of the other ones, just like, I was like, yeah, this is the best. Mm-hmm. And here they were just like, oh yeah, they seem fine.
Yeah. I don't know. While that's probably true, I think because almost every single one of these songs is one that I love, I didn't really care so much. I mean, even here, like Parliament in the credits, I was like cracking up with like Flashlight. I mean, you guys remember we were singing that at Comic-Con the whole time. Like every time we walk across the street, I was like, red light. It was as obnoxious as it was. I just love that song. And then like,
and I'm not a music guy, so that's...
And like with Come a Little Bit Closer, when the arrow's flying through the spaceship and just murdering everybody, that's such a fun and silly song, and it went perfect with that scene. Loved it.
Yeah. All
right. Do you want to hear my top five?
I would love to with all every ounce of my being.
All right. So for number five, I've got Ant-Man.
Yeah.
Number love four, The First Avengers.
Nice.
Number three, Civil War. I really loved that one. Now, I haven't seen it a second time. I hear it diminishes the more often you see it, so I'm going to leave it with my first impression. Number two is the first Captain America movie. And then number one...
Sorry. laugh at me right off the podcast.
Number one is the first Iron Man, so we all agree on our number one.
Yeah.
In fact, I'd even go so far as to say that's probably in my top five favorite movies of all time. Is the first Iron Man? Oh yeah,
it's pretty good.
Yeah, it is utterly rewatchable, and I truly adore that movie.
Yeah, I love it.
Throw that movie in
when Jeff Bridges is yelling at his techs who can't like recreate Tony Stark's setting. Tony Stark built this in a cave.
Yeah.
Man. The guy's like, well, I'm not Tony Stark. I mean, what else do you say to that, right? It's fantastic.
Yeah. I guess, to be fair, Marvel told us right off the bat that they weren't going to have good villains.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, Ironmonger.
In all honesty, like, that's one of my biggest gripes with comics. I love comics. I've read a ton of them. But it always comes down to the final moment when they face the villain. It's never a good payoff for me. I'm always just kind of like, oh, that sucked, or oh, that was weak, especially with epic crossovers,
right?
Regardless whether it's like Ultron or Apocalypse or Magneto, I don't care. I'm never ever satisfied with the ending.
Were you happy with the confrontation between Star-Lord and Ego?
I was, only because it set the stage for them being able to take on what the biggest and baddest the universe has to offer, and they were able to persevere, so it was kind of cool. Like, I mean, I liked how the only way that Ego could really fight them is if he came into this form, sort of, you know, manipulating his planet to be just a giant danger zone. You know, it was kind of, I honestly feel that he wasn't going to hurt Star-Lord to the point where he killed him, because he needed him in order to get all the energy that he needed to fix his universe. So he was pulling his punches. So that's the only reason why it really worked.
Yeah. And I did like that they worked in the face on the planet at that one point.
Oh, I know. That's straight out of a comic book.
Yeah, I was pretty excited that they brought the comic book Ego in there. Sure. At one point, I'm like, are they going to put Caressel's face on this thing?
I know, right? It looks like the moon in Legend of Zelda.
Yeah, Majora's Mask.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, I think maybe that's why I was so salty on it, is that the only part of that finale, the conflict that worked between Quill and Ego, aside from the awesome Pac-Man, was... the little heart to heart that he had, to where, like, you know, basically explained to him, like, if, you know, if I die, you know, you're just going to be a normal dude again, you know, that's going to suck for you. And, other than that, I just didn't like that so much of it was like, it gave me a real Star Trek V vibe, like a real them fighting God on that planet And, you know, he even with like his face that lit up and he shot beams and, you know, and then he had all of a sudden these like tentacles that were like trying to attack everybody. And then he was surrounding them all in rock. And
while that is true, I honestly believe that it was taken straight out of pages of a comic book. Like, it literally just personified what you read daily in those comic books. And for me, it was just translating it from one form to another, and that was on screen, and it literally felt like I was just watching a comic book come to life, and I was right. Okay with it.
No, I'm not shitting on it that it was terrible. I'm just
you are. Just, it has passed through your body, and you are ready to flush it down the toilet, and I'm sad.
Well, I guess what my argument to that would be is that a two-dimensional, non-moving comic book has limitations that a fully functioning and operational Marvel blockbuster doesn't have, and they could have done different things.
Made it better, is that what you're saying? Well, I think that while that is true, I think that their way of making it better was having all the emotional distress expand on it a little bit. You know, it was literally almost the end for all of our characters, as opposed to in the first one when they're coming together just to defeat this one villain. In this case, it was more like they were actually fighting just to survive. Does that make sense? It wasn't necessarily them just coming together to beat this one guy. It was, oh my God, we got to do something or we're all dead kind of thing. And I like that approach much more.
Yeah, I mean, they raised the stakes, and that's always fun. Mm-hmm. You know, they all got buried in rock, and then Star-Lord had to save them.
And we got to see other planets be affected by his seed that he planted all over the place. That was kind of weird. Another giant blob, another thing that's just destroying worlds, as it were.
Yeah, and I think that's one thing the Guardians of the Galaxy franchise has done pretty good is, you know, they've taken us off of Earth. And, you know, I know Thor goes to Midgard, or he goes to Midgard and goes to Asgard. But, you know, I think that the Guardians is really opening up this cosmic universe, which is my favorite aspect of Marvel Comics outside of X-Men. You know, I love the Thanos, Adam Warlock stuff, you know, and I can't wait to see where they're going to go with Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. I almost want them to keep it like self-contained to the Guardians. You know, I don't want Adam Warlock to show up in like the Avengers. I would really like for them to almost, obviously the Guardians, the Galaxy, and the Avengers will team up for Infinity War and whatever Avengers 4 is. But then I'd really like to see it almost separate to where we have the Avengers and Earth's Mightiest Heroes. And then we have this cosmic franchises, you know, to where we have our Guardians, our Adam Warlocks, you know, we have people like that. And
Even the Ravagers, like Stallone's Ravager crew, that's a whole other side of things too. That we're not.
Ving Rhames.
Yeah,
I wasn't ready for Ving Rhames to show up at the end.
Yeah. Exactly. I'm like, yeah.
No, that's like cool. I saw Stallone in the credits, and I was like, oh yeah, I forgot.
And in all honesty, Guardians does have a lot more to offer in that respect. I mean, when they first went to Nowhere, that was like one of the coolest things ever in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Them literally walking around and shopping inside of like a Titan head.
just the head.
Yeah, it's just neat. And you're not going to get that in anything else. So, no. I don't know. That's crazy.
Yeah. Well, I made $145 million, so it couldn't have been too bad. You know, it opened up in some of the foreign markets the week before, so it's sitting pretty. It's going to make a buck or two. Mm-hmm. Not Fast and Furious money. So Vin Diesel and Kurt Russell's previous film, Fate and the Furious, you know, yeah, that's probably still going to make more money. But, you know, they collabed again.
Yeah.
That's all I got. You guys got anything else you want to chat about?
I don't think so.
Randy? Nope. Nothing?
Not a thing.
All right. You were so quiet this episode. I feel like we were railroading you.
That's what I'm used to it.
Where does Bloodsucker Jones fit into the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
In any crack he can sweet talk his way into, that's where he fits in.
I ain't no hero, baby.
He's like water. He fills the space. Well, cool. Well, thanks for joining us for another great episode of the Geekalacy Podcast. You know, you got to make sure that you like and subscribe to this podcast and, you know, tell your friends and write a review and give us 5 stars, because then we're like, yes, and we're all happy. And you can do that for the other podcast in the Geek Legacy Network. You got the Pixelated Podcast with Justin and Stephen K. James talking about video games. Almost rhymes. I'm gonna try to make it work. And then, of course, you have Tyler and Jeff on the Comic Corner Podcast, which I'm sure they will discuss Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, because whereas I know next to nothing about the comics, they know everything about the comics. And I'm sure they will tell us what they liked, what they didn't like, and that's about it. But, yeah. Make sure you follow us on Facebook, like us on Twitter, @GeekLegacy, and I will see you guys later.